America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is John Lyons right now on WEEI.
Back here on WEEI, I'm John Lyons alongside Chris Schein. Final hour of the show coming up here. We're going to be mostly Celtics, but if you want to talk something else, join us, 617-779-7937. We've already talked Bruins. We've talked Patriots quite a bit. There is some Red Sox news hanging out there today as well if you want to get to that. We will have Justin Turpin of WEEI.com joining us at 920 to talk Celtics season so far as well as Celtics versus Warriors tomorrow. But before we get to that, there's been a legitimate feud brewing over the past 6-7 months, maybe longer, between Kendrick Perkins, who was part of the 2008 Celtics championship team. Many believe, including myself, if he didn't tear his ACL in Game 6 of the 2010 Finals, that team would have won a second ring. Between him and the current Boston Celtics team, he's been very negative about the Celtics in the media over the past year or so, including after they won the championship. And he went on All the Smoke podcast earlier today, and he had this to say about the Celtics, him, and banner night.
Is it true that the Celtics banned you from ring night?
To be quite honest, I don't give a f-, right? I don't give a f-, because here's the thing. I never take winning the championship for granted.
Right.
But they act like you have to be tied to that situation or that's your life, right? Like, it was an honor to play for one of the most historical franchises. I never take that for granted.
Right.
I think what ended up happening was, well, I know, I said a take about Joe Mazzulla. They win the championship, and Brian Scalabrine, f***ing Scale, he's like, well, doors not just open for him to come back to the Celtic organization. Now, it's two things I took from there. One, Scal, who the f*** are you?
Right.
You was the same that when we won a championship, was in street clothes, hurry up and went changed into your jersey. So once we started taking pictures, you could know that you was part of the team. And I actually like Scal, but I thought that should have been a phone conversation, right? Started this season, I actually get an email from Joe Mazzulla saying, whenever you're free, if you're in Boston or we play the Rockets, I want to go to dinner and break bread.
So you're going to take that dinner with Mazzulla?
Yeah, for sure. I'm actually starting to love the way that he is.
And you got to think, like, his growing pains were on TV. He was thrown in the fire immediately.
Yeah.
And he got exposed in that first round of the playoffs. And I think, like most players, he went back and got better from it.
He did.
A lot of layers to this one. First of all, Kendrick Perkins absolutely smoking WEEI frequent guest Brian Scalabrine. And also, just you can feel, Scheim, like there's some real animosity there and there's some anger about him being left out of banner night. But also, I don't know if it's he feels like they're misunderstanding his criticism or he thinks they need to toughen up. But there's a little bit of a I'm the big brother, you're the little brother type deal, it feels like, from Perk to the current Celtics.
Yeah, I don't necessarily get that vibe. I just think this is who Perk is. Like, he works for ESPN. He makes money by giving hot takes. That's why he jumped from NBC to ESPN so quickly. I mean, years ago, not that long ago, he was a guest on our station pretty frequently. And then all of a sudden, he became too big time, started being on First Take and all this stuff. And so he just kind of blew up because he's not afraid to give hot takes and have opinions. It's kind of his job, which is exactly why I think Joe Mazzulla has since, as he said, like emailed him and like, yo, like, let's, you know, you're in town or I'm in Houston, whatever, like, let's get dinner and let's break bread. And like, because I think Joe Mazzulla gets it. I think Joe Mazzulla understands the role of the media. I mean, he's a guy who's even said, like, words can't hurt me. They're just words. Like, who cares? None of you are going to be at my funeral. Like, Joe Mazzulla is like, I don't think that stuff bothers him that much. I think, honestly, the beef here is between Scal and Kendrick Perkins. Like, to me, that's the clear beef where Perkins is like, who the F are you to be saying that about me not being able to come back?
Not gonna lie, I kind of laughed at that.
Like, I did
no
too.
No offense to Scal, that was a pretty good line.
It was hilarious because it's Kendrick Perkins who worked for the team and then has since gone on to bigger things, whereas Scal has just been a team honk since he left the team. And he's like giving criticism to Perk, and Perk's like, dude, who the hell are you? You didn't even start for our team. Like, I won those titles with those guys, not you. And so I think that's where the real beef lies.
And I do think, though, first of all, I agree with you, there's a rift between Scal and Perk. And even though Perk said he likes him, I mean, that didn't sound like things are so great. But it does feel like there's a issue between Perk and some of the current players on this team. And I don't know who those guys are, but that Sun report said that it quoted guys on the roster saying, you know, who is this guy? Like, we don't want him around. And I think there have been times where Perk's gone a little overboard. Like, he was leading the charge last year, like this time a year and a half ago, to break up the Jays, trade Jaylen Brown or trade Jason Tatum, and they were never going to work together. And look, he wasn't the only one in saying that, but he was a really strong voice. And then this summer, when he was like, no one's scared of the Boston Celtics, like, if I was a player in that locker room, I wouldn't want him around either. Like, I can understand why there's animosity between those guys and Perk. And maybe Mazzulla, it's not the same, but it feels like from guys on that roster, there is legit animosity between them and Perk.
Ah, see, I think that's just it's all overblown. Like, I mean, the guy's paid to just give hot takes. Like, that's what he does. It's just kind of his gig. And
sure, but if you do that and your hot takes keep disparaging the same team, those guys are going to get pissed and they're going to hold it against you for a while.
Maybe, but like at the same time, like, dude, that's what the media does. Like, that's what radio hosts and TV hosts do. And it's because the Celtics are so good that he's going to have disparaging takes on them, because you don't get good clicks or good views for saying, yeah, the Celtics are really good. I love this team. They're awesome. Smile face. Like, no, you have to rail against them. You have to go against them because the Celtics fan base, first of all, is feral. And anytime you come at them, you come at like their Lord and Savior. So they're going to come and attack you. And so that's going to get you a million clicks and views. And every Boston radio station is going to play it and talk about it and say you're an idiot and all this stuff. And so, like, it's part of the job. And I think a lot of those players, like, I don't think that there is this level of animosity between like Perk and Jaylen Brown. I don't buy that. I think a lot of that is fabricated, and like, are sometimes the players kind of upset with some of the stuff people say? Sure, but like, I think they get over it pretty quick because they know what the media's job is.
Yeah, and I think the point about his job, I get, right? He's on First Take. It's his point. Or his goal is to say things to get attention. And I'm not saying he doesn't do any real basketball analysis. He does. And sure, at times he's very entertaining. But also it helps him if he says things that get a lot of attention. And I just, maybe a lot of guys it doesn't bother. But I bet you there's one, two, maybe three guys in that locker room who look at him constantly, especially the fact that he's a Celtics alumni. And I know when you're in the media, it's a different role, but these are guys that probably look at it and say, hey, you wore this uniform, you won a championship here, and now all you do is say negative things about us. Like, maybe not all the guys, but I do really believe there's at least one, maybe two or three guys that say, you know what, we know it's his job, but that doesn't mean we want to have to deal with him being here all the time.
Yeah, sure, I guess that's fair, but like,
like, when you say no one's scared of the Boston Celtics, like, let's look back, too, over the past few years. Like, Milwaukee wins a championship in 2021, and all everyone nationally talked about after that was, is Giannis better than LeBron? Is Milwaukee the next team to win multiple championships? Then in 22, the Warriors win, and everybody's saying, wow, Steph's now a top five player of all time. The Warriors did it again. And by the way, I agree with those sentiments on Steph and the Warriors.
I do as
good
well.
For them. But Then in 23, Denver wins, and everyone in the national media spends the entire summer worshiping at the altar of the Denver Nuggets. And look, they're an amazing team. I gave them props, too. I still think they're going to win another championship in the next 4 or 5 years. They're not only going to win one with Jokic. They're going to win more than one. But to see that, and then the contrast this summer, where guys like Perk and others spend all summer talking about the Knicks trades and Windhorst saying it's going to be the best offense in the NBA after the Celtics just set a record in offensive rating the year before in a record or was top 10 all-time in net rating just the year before and blew teams out all throughout the playoffs. And then you have Perk saying no one's scared of the Boston Celtics and everyone picking against them to repeat as champs. Like, I think at least some of these guys have to take that and just say, enough is enough. Whether they don't want Perk around there or they're sick of some of this, because as I said earlier in the show, they're the most disrespected defending NBA champion in any recent memory I have.
Yeah, I just think I just don't think they want him there because he's not a super homer like Scal or even like Pierce and KG have been relative homers for the Celtics over the last, year or two and supporting of those guys. And so I get it, like, whatever. But I don't think that there is. So you look at, like, Jaylen Brown had a legitimate issue with Stephen A. Smith, right? When Stephen A. Smith was saying stuff about Jaylen Brown.
Guys don't want to play with him. Right?
Correct. Yeah. You don't want to play with him, and, like, sponsorships don't want to utilize him and stuff like that. Like, that was, like, an attack on his character, and I think he absolutely took offense to that. Like, cite your sources, that whole thing. But then they eventually sit down, they break bread, they do a podcast, everything's all fine and dandy. Like, I think that was a legitimate issue for Jaylen Brown. I think they look at Kendrick Perkins like, dude's just like, all right, Perk, whatever. Like, I don't think they give him a second thought. Like, I think it was more...
But to
Celtics
not let him go
management
to night,
that wouldn't want him to be there, like, than the players.
To not let him go to Banner Night, that tells me they give it a little bit more thought.
Yeah, but that's not Tatum and Brown inviting him to Banner
Night. If Tatum and Brown went to management and said, we want him there, he would have been there. Or even if Al Horford went there and said, I want him there, he would have been there. None of those guys did that.
But to be indifferent towards him is different than having a problem with him.
But they didn't. But there was guys in that Sun story quoted saying, we didn't want him there. And then it said Perk contacted guys and they wouldn't help him. Like, that tells me maybe they don't hate his guts, but that there's some animosity there. And maybe they'll do a podcast and sit down and it'll be fine. But I don't know. It just feels like there's some. And you're right that I'm sure some of these players want guys just to be a homer on broadcasts and on shows. But also, if it's the correct take, I don't know if it's really being a homer, right? Like, if we say they're going to win a championship. I mean, yeah, I'm a Celtics fan, but if it's correct, I'm not just being a homer, right?
Yeah, for me, the Perk situation was probably more of an issue with upper management and or ownership than it was with the players, whereas the Stephen A. Smith thing is like a legitimate issue with Jaylen Brown, and I think that's kind of the difference there for me.
And coming up next, we're going to talk to WEEI's Justin Turpin. If you don't follow his work, you should. Not only follow him on Twitter, follow him on social. Read his stuff on WEEI.com. He covers the Celtics. He joined me every playoff game, post game last year, and it was awesome. He's already been on a couple times so far this season. He's going to talk about the Celtics season so far and their big game against the Warriors tomorrow night. But before we get to that, we have to trend with Zach Coe.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Celtics beat the Hawks last night, 123-93, the final in Atlanta. Jason Tatum led the way with 28 points. Derek White and Peyton Pritchard were right behind him with 21 and 18, respectively. They return home for a quick two-game homestand, kicking off tomorrow against the Warriors. You just heard John Lyons mention him, but our very own Justin Turpin is reporting that Jaylen Brown will remain out of the lineup for that matchup against Golden State, continuing to nurse a hip injury. Bruins are in action tonight up in Toronto. They're down 2-0 right now, just 3 minutes into the third period. Toronto currently on their sixth power play of the game. Jeremy Swayman got the start in net for the Bees. NFL trade deadline has come and gone, and no moves for the Patriots. Elsewhere around the league, the Commanders acquired corner Marshon Lattimore from New Orleans. Lions acquire edge rusher Za'Darius Smith from the Browns. In a pair of moves for the Steelers, they got edge rusher Preston Smith from the Packers and wide receiver Mike Williams from the Jets. My name is Zach Coe, and that's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com. More Lions and Chime coming up after this.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
We're back to John Lyons on WEEI.
Back here on WEEI, I'm John Lyons alongside Chris Schein. We have Zach co-producing for us. And tomorrow night is probably the second biggest Celtics game of the year so far, Schein, behind Banner Night, because they actually get to play Steve Kerr and the Warriors.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah, and it's funny. You notice I said they play Steve Kerr and the Warriors, not Steph Curry, because there might be some revenge in the air after Steve Kerr benched Jason Tatum multiple times in the Olympics. Of course, was part of the brain trust that left Jaylen Brown off the Olympic team. And joining us to discuss that and many more Celtics topics tonight is Justin Turpin of WEEI.com. Turp, welcome into the program. How are you tonight?
What's going on, fellas? How we doing?
Oh, not too bad, Turp. And I want to start off with Jaylen Brown, right? He's missed a couple games now. He's got that hip injury. From everything you can gather and everything you've heard, how severe is this injury and how long is it going to sideline him?
Yeah, they don't seem very worried about it. Joe Mazzulla was talking about it today where it's kind of a day-to-day thing, and they really don't seem worried about it. And he stayed on the trip when he was out last week. He was in Atlanta getting shots up and was getting work, you know, with the team. So I don't think there's really any reason to worry about it. I think it is just a management thing because it's been something that's been bothering him since the preseason. And now you're just so early in the season, you know how important he is. You just don't want to push it. So I don't think there's really anything to worry about, especially just from the research I've done on these type of injuries. It's usually about a week-long thing, but this one's been nagging him. So there's really no rush to rush him back. Obviously, they've been one of the best teams in basketball right from the start here. And just looking at their schedule after Golden State, they play the 4-4 Nets, the 1-6 Bucks, the 3-5 Hawks, then Brooklyn again, and then the 2-6 Raptors. So there's really no reason to rush him back. Let him take his time, let him heal up, because they're going to need him come the spring.
Terp, you have a piece up on EEI.com talking about Nemias Keita. Celtics 10-1 with Keita playing at least 14 minutes last season. This season, when he plays 15-plus minutes, they're already 3-0. What have you seen from him? What have you heard about how much this team likes him? Living life without Kristaps Porzingis right now.
Yeah, Joe Mazzulla was really complimentary of him last night, just saying how he's starting to figure out how good of a player he can be. And Mazzulla was really complimentary of him last year as well, where he was saying how he's such a young player, and now he's really starting to figure out the game. And the Celtics took a chance with him. They obviously, right after he was released by the Sacramento Kings last preseason in favor of JaVale McGee, of all people, which is kind of funny looking back on it, they took a shot at him, gave him a two-way deal, and they rewarded him, converting that to a standard deal right before the postseason. Then over the summer, they gave him a 3-year contract. So it really does feel like every time he's in there, good things happen. Obviously, like you mentioned, 10-1 when he played at least 14 minutes last season, 15-plus this season, they're 3-0. So he just has a knack for making plays. And I mean, it's not always perfect. He's definitely looked lost a couple times in the defensive schemes, whatever it may be. And last night he got a quick pull right around the 7:49 mark or whatever it was, and Joe Mazzulla kind of lit into him on the sideline. But, you know, everything he does, it seems like he's always in the right spot, which is encouraging. And with the new CBA, it's so important to develop these young guys and turn them into pieces that you can rely on. So it's certainly encouraging that they can really rely on him, and he's playing big minutes for them this season. So they seem to have a lot of faith in him, and he's given them every reason to have that faith.
And Kata had more minutes last night than Luke Kornet did and Xavier Tillman did. In your sense, Terp, has he surpassed those guys? Was it a matchup thing? Because I feel like Kornet's had some pretty good moments earlier this year. But again, you know, Kata got more minutes than him. Is this just a matchup against Atlanta thing? Or is he starting to surpass them as that next big option behind Porzingis, obviously, when he's healthy, and Al Horford?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think he certainly was rewarded minutes for his play. Like, he came off the bench, obviously, in Indiana, sparked that big comeback. They were down 21 in the fourth quarter, forced overtime, and he was right in the middle of that. So I think it was a reward for him, kind of getting into the starting lineup. But it's also a matchup thing. It's always been a matchup thing with these bigs when Kristaps Porzingis is out. The backup big in the postseason, obviously, it was a matter of matchups between Kornet and Xavier Tillman. And now you're adding Namish Keita into the fold here. And that just speaks to the depth of the Celtics, where we're kind of analyzing right now a third center, right? And who's going in off the bench. And you have full confidence in anyone that does, because guys like Kornet and Tillman proved they can do it on the biggest stage last year. I mean, look at Tillman's corner three. That switch changed the game in game three. And then you got Luke Kornet. You're right in the corner, right in that third quarter. And then Luke Kornet has stepped up consistently. And he's one of the most underappreciated reserves in my book. I think he always just makes the right play, and he's really learning to play within the offense. And it's just so special, the depth that this team has, because you have these kind of conversations where you're debating, you know, why is this center playing over this, because you trust them all. So to answer your question, though, it is a matchup thing, and that's just how it's always going to be with the Celtics. Like, Joe Mazzulla looks really deep into those matchups, so that's what it's going to be with these bigs.
Well, Terp, from bigs to smalls, you and I talked about this right before the season began. I asked you about the possibility of Peyton Pritchard, sixth man of the year. You said absolutely in play. Since that time, he has had 15 or more points in all but two games so far this season. He has been awesome at times for this team. I mean, he had 28 points a game, 22 just two games ago, 18 against the Hawks the other night. Do you expect what we're seeing from Peyton Pritchard to continue as we go further on into this season?
I don't see why it doesn't. I mean, every year he's had more opportunity. He's shown that he's ready for the moment. Look at last year when he got that extension. There was a real conversation around Peyton Pritchard and whether or not he was fit enough to be a backup point guard, and whether or not that contract was a reach by Brad Stevens. Now you're looking at it, it's like, man, they got him at that number. Every time he's had a bigger opportunity, he stepped up and answered the call. So I really don't see why not, especially when guys are going to be in and out of the lineup this year for whatever reasons. Like, obviously, Jaylen Brown's a little bit of a different example, but Kristaps Porzingis is sidelined. Al Horford, he's not going to play back-to-backs. They're going to manage his minutes. And we talked about it then, too. Jrue Holiday, I think they'll also try to manage his minutes when possible. So Pritchard's going to play. He's a gamer. And he played all 82 games last year, played sparingly in the rotation the year before, but he was always healthy and ready to go. So I really don't see why it doesn't. He's a microwave shooter or microwave scorer. He's not afraid to get shots up, and he's just so confident, and that confidence goes a long way. And I think we talked about it too when we were discussing the Sixth Man of the Year award, just his reputation now, that people understand what he is, the type of player he is. He's not buried on this bench. Peyton Pritchard now, in most NBA houses, is a household name because of the finals, right? He was so impactful last season on one of the most dominant teams in NBA history that he has built a name and a reputation for himself, and I truly think that matters when determining a Sixth Man of the Year at the end of the season.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people remember Pritchard for those half-court shots, but he's really built himself into a much more complete player, Terp, than, as you alluded to, even a year ago at this time, a lot of people thought he was. And you mentioned something there about rotations and Horford back-to-backs, and we had this discussion earlier in the show, Terp, about the different ways to load manage. And one way is you beat the Hawks by 30, so none of your starters play over 30 minutes, right? Another way is to sit guys out completely. Another way is to just have a rotation where more bench players play on a given night. Do you have a sense of how they're going to approach this? Because they do have an older player in Al Horford, late 30s, a mid-30s player in Jrue Holiday, a player in Porzingis whose health they have to manage once he comes back. How are they going to approach load management with some of these guys?
Yeah, I think you mentioned it there, going deeper into the rotation. And that's a real credit, again, to how deep this team is, because the last couple of games, Joe Mazzulla has gone almost 10 deep in the first quarter. And that's really showing a lot of trust in this team, because in the past, he's really stuck with tight rotations. But this team now, he has so much trust in them because they've been there. They've succeeded at the highest level. Even guys like Jordan Walsh, who he's trusting now to get big run. Namish Keita, who stepped up last year. And Mazzulla often points to it that Keita won them games in December. So he has trust in these guys, which is huge. So if you're able to expand the rotation, you can naturally just knock down minutes. Because guys like Jrue Holiday, guys like Al Horford, as much as they understand the purpose of managing their minutes and making sure they're good for the postseason, they want to play. Of course they want to be out there. So, yeah, part of load management will be just taking care of business and beating the snot out of these teams and getting the second half off, which we saw a ton last year from this team. But also part of it is going deeper into that rotation, trusting these younger guys who, again, as I alluded to earlier, are going to need to step up and be contributors just given the new nature of the CBA and the new nature of the league. So they have a lot of ways of doing it, and we're seeing him get really creative with these lineups, trot out different things, trot out different rotations. So they're trying it, and it's worked so far. Like, look at last night, for example, Horford, 22 minutes, Jrue Holiday, 23. I mean, that's what you like to see, especially this early in the season.
Terp, Jason Tatum currently leads the league in total points scored so far in this early season. Do you think that's a goal for him over the course of the entire season, is to really kind of be up there at the top of the list and really push for an MVP at this point?
Yeah, and he's actually embracing the MVP. He talked about it a couple weeks ago where you can chase a championship and be the best player for your team and do what's right for your team, but it's also important to have personal goals. And I think too often people combine the two, where you can't go for an NBA championship and an MVP. You absolutely can. And Jason Tatum's taking that approach, which is totally fair. And I do think he's making it a point to be more aggressive this year. He's shooting a career-high three-point attempts per game. He's knocking down four, which is also a career-high. So he's making it a point to be more aggressive, and he should be, because he can be one of these elite scorers. We've seen this. This is no surprise. And I really like how he's asserting himself earlier in the games, too. I mean, in the first quarter, he's just been lethal. He's averaging almost over 13 points a game or points a quarter in the first quarter. So that's huge. So I do think it's a personal growth for him, and it's a goal that he wants to achieve. And more power to him. I think that's important to have that personal goal and that personal achievements that you want to reach. That's important, and he does that.
So, Terp, I want to follow up on that with a two-part question here. One is, do you think this is the best basketball Jason Tatum has played in his career? And two, what do you expect from him tomorrow night in this Warriors game?
Yeah, for the first part, I absolutely think it is. And it's a small sample size. Again, it's only been eight games. But we're seeing him make plays that the old Jason Tatum wouldn't. And that's not only on the stat sheet. I think more impressively is his work, the stuff that doesn't show up, like him moving the ball. Like when they're showing two, he's almost always making the right read and creating open shots for teammates. And that's so important. And I think people really got an understanding of how special he is at doing that and reading the game. And last year during the finals, because he was creating for his teammates, and he didn't shoot the best, but it's Jason Tatum, so they're still going to show him that respect, and they're going to throw defenders at him, and he was making the right reads. And I think Joe Mazzulla, to his credit, has really taught this team the importance of spacing, and they really understand it now, and they all work cohesively for that, and Jason Tatum's the head of that snake. So I think this is the best basketball we've seen him play, both with the stats and with the stuff that doesn't necessarily show up. And for tomorrow, looking forward to it, like, I don't expect him to do anything different than he is now. I know it's been a circle on the calendar that this is, everyone can't wait to see how he responds to the Steve Kerr and the benching. But to me, I really don't think he's going to try to do too much. Like, I think he's going to be aggressive, but it's all going to come within the game, because that's just the type of player he is. And that goes back to the stuff that I was just talking about, that He just wants to win. And as much as he wants to make a statement here, are people going to remember, which they probably will locally at least, what they did to the Warriors in a game in early November? Or are they going to remember when they go back-to-back, hopefully, in the spring? So I think that's how he weighs it. And I really expect him to come out and be aggressive, but I wouldn't expect anything crazy. He's not going to play out of the game. It's not going to be something completely different. He's not going to force shots. It's all going to come naturally, and he's been dominant as is, so he should just stick with what he's doing because it's been working.
Terp, you talk about that one mindset that all they want to do, all Jason Tatum wants to do is win, and we've kind of come to the point where it feels like that's the case for the entire team. Do you think that's enough? That one singular motivation is going to be enough for them to be, once again, wire-to-wire the best team in basketball?
I do, because I think they understand the opportunity at hand here, that they are one of the most dominant teams ever assembled, and the numbers don't lie. That's not an opinion. That is a fact. They were top five in point differential last year, cruised to an NBA Finals, and they brought back essentially the whole team. So they understand just the opportunity they have ahead. And timing is so important in players' careers when guys are coming together and being able to buy into that mindset, because everyone just wants to win at this point of their career. For the most part, they've all been taken care of. Most of them have extensions on this team, or others have been, you know, cutting their teeth and just want to win championships. So I think it's so important. And I think Joe Mazzulla is the perfect leader for this team in keeping them grounded to that mindset. Because even before, we saw this team just always had these chronic lapses, whether it was the third quarters, whether it was slow starts, just not getting up for big-time games. We always saw that. And then all of a sudden, that was gone last year. And part of that is because of the talent, obviously. You can't neglect that. But I think part of that is also because Joe Mazzulla instilled this mindset in them, and he has this unique way of getting his point across, and they are all in on it. So I do think that's enough, because they understand just such the rare opportunity they have here. And now they're addicted to that winning feeling, and that's what they're chasing. They're not looking back as, like, defending their title. They just want to do it again, and I do think that goes a long way, because it's a really unique mindset this team has, and it's a dangerous one.
Terp, the NBA Cup starts next week. Does this really matter at all for the Celtics this season?
Actually, you know what? I do think it matters, and I think it matters okay. For guys like Luke Kornet, guys like Xavier Tillman, and guys like Namir Keita, who took less to give you a chance to win. So what's a good way to reward them is get them the money by winning the NBA Cup, because each player gets a bonus. And it's not much in the grand scheme to guys like Tatum and Holiday and Brown, but to these guys that took minimum contracts to stay here and win, that's a great way to reward them, right? Get them that extra cash. Get them that stuff that goes a long way. Show them that, hey, like, you did that for us. First of all, let's try to send a statement to the rest of the league, but let's also give you a little boost for sticking around and trying to help us win another one. So I really do think it does matter, because there's plenty of guys on this roster that took less to be here. So this is a good way to reward them on top of playoff bonuses. So I think they're going to take it seriously. And last year, obviously, they did. Look at the Bulls game. Like, as much as Joe Mazzulla wasn't really into it, once the push came to shove, they had a chance to win it. He did against Chicago. They're hack of Drummond in the third quarter. So I think they're going to take it seriously. And I think they should, because those guys that took less to be here and less to contribute to this team and hopefully get them another championship deserve some compensation and deserve some love, and that's a good way to show it to them.
All right, Terp, last one from me. I know you're a gambling guy, as a member of the Bozo Parlay every week on Jones and Keefe, so I have
that's
to ask
right.
for the Warriors game, what which is the better bet? To bet that the Celtics win by 15-plus, or that Jason Tatum has more than 40 points in the game?
Oof, that's tough, because I just said how he's going to play within the game. So I do think he's going to get near 40, but oof. Is that an alternate line? Because it was 7 points, right?
Yeah. So the line is 7 points. I'm going to go alternate line. I want to really juice it up for myself, because I feel like either the Celtics just absolutely run train on this Warriors team, or Jason Tatum does it himself. And so Jason Tatum 40 plus is 5.5 to 1. The Celtics to win by 15 is about 3 to 1. So
I think I'd lean the Tatum, because this Warriors team's really good.
Okay,
they are a good team. So I don't like 15's a hard, and I know the Celtics make it look easy, but winning by 15 in the NBA against another 6-1 team is tough. So I think I'd go with the Tatum one if you're looking for the juice.
All right. He is Justin Turpin of WEEI.com. Does a fantastic job covering the Celtics for the website, and you can hear him on the Slammed Pod as well. Turp, really appreciate you taking the time and sharing your insight.
Anytime, guys.
All right.
Thanks, Turp.
That was Justin Turpin. And Shime, it feels like this Celtics game tomorrow night, I'm not going to say it's the most anticipated regular season game of the year, because that would be banner night, and there's probably going to be a home game against Denver or one against Minnesota later this year that might top it. But, I mean, for November 6th, it's a pretty big game.
Yeah, it's huge. It's a little disappointing that we won't have Jaylen Brown for it, but even still, it's still a big game. Like Terp said, this Warriors team is pretty good. Buddy Hield has been very good for them, especially beyond the arc so far this season. So it'll be an interesting sight to see exactly how they approach their matchup against the Celtics. But I expect nothing but the Celtics wanting to blow doors here.
Yeah, and the Jaylen Brown being out piece is unfortunate, because I think Terp's right in the Tatum will want to just play the game and play within the structure of the game and maybe give a little extra here and there. I feel like Brown is the one that would have come out just wanting to embarrass Steve Kerr in this game.
For sure.
Him not being there is unfortunate, but maybe it's an opportunity for, you know, you asked Terp about Nemus Keita and how good he's been. Maybe it's an opportunity for someone like him to shine on a little bit of a bigger stage tomorrow night.
Yeah, I would love that opportunity for him. Even my guy Pete Pritch gets out there, maybe drops another 20 on him. That'd be nice. I will be glued to the television for sure.
Well, believe it or not, Terp, we are already just about done with our show tonight. I feel like it's been a...
Did you just call me Terp?
Wow, I see. It's been 3.5 hours.
You're a little tired. I get it. You know, I think you took offense to the Shime and somebody else program. I understand. It's okay.
Yeah, so I apologize, Shime. It's already been 3.5 hours. We're almost done. We have the final segment of the Shime and Some Other Guy show coming up next.
We're back to John Lyons on WEEI.
Back here on WEEI, I'm John Lyons, alongside Chris Shime and Zach co-producing. Final segment of the show here. We talked a lot of Patriots, some Celtics, some Bruins. We had Justin Turpin of WEEI.com to join us. Chris Shime had his first ever experience with Just a Jag. If you missed any of it, Odyssey app is free. You can go on Apple Podcasts, WEEI.com. However you feel like finding us, you can find us and hear all of our takes tonight. And Shime, first question I have to ask you, now that it's been, you know, a couple hours or so, was Just a Jag the best experience of your radio career?
I would definitely say it's on the Mount Rushmore.
Okay, on the Mount Rushmore. You know what? I will take that. So Zach Coe and I were hiding this. Right? We were like, oh, Just a Jag. Well, even though KJ's not in time, we'll use Just a Jag because we want to see how Shime reacts to it. So it's on the Mount Rushmore. I love to hear it.
Yeah, I've been a part of a lot of fun segments here on the station dating back now. I've been here for quite a while, but I would say Just a Jag definitely up there.
So one thing that was not fun: the Bruins ended up losing 4-0 to the Toronto Maple Leafs. Issues with penalties, sloppy defense. Scott McLaughlin of WEEI.com just tweeted out, he revert to the same old problems after an encouraging weekend. Shime, we kind of talked about this earlier. It feels like this team, they just can't stack good performances together.
No, and I don't really know why, right? Like, this past weekend, you're like, oh, nice. Not just one, but back-to-back good games. All right, let's build on this. Let's move forward. And then against the Maple Leafs, you can't capitalize on power plays. You're getting a bunch of penalties yourself. You give up power play, like, at least 2 power play goals in this one. And, like, it's just, it's a nightmare. It is... There seems to be maybe there is some smoke to the Scoops Keefe report that Jim Montgomery is very much on the hot seat.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, it's just frustrating that a roster that I looked at before the year that I felt was better than last year and more built for the playoffs is performing much worse than the first month of the last two seasons. So we'll see if they can turn it around, but it's been a extremely frustrating, we'll call it, first month or so of the Bruins season.
Toronto scored 3 power play goals and an empty netter tonight. That's just unacceptable.
Yeah, I mean, but that's also when
not
you're
great.
Taking, yeah, when
not
you're
great.
Taking
Thank
penalties,
you, Alex Cora.
when you're taking penalties left and right, I mean, you kind of open the door for these things. And then, of course, the Bruins, through the first two periods, I think had five power plays, didn't score in any of them, obviously didn't score the entire night.
The
but...
Bruins were 0-for-6 on power play opportunities tonight.
Yeah.
Whereas Toronto was 3-for-7. If I see Charlie McAvoy on the power play anymore, he's terrible.
And this is a guy, I mean, he's supposed to be the guy that can be, you know, the elite power play type defenseman. It just, it's not
there. What defenseman would you put there instead of McAvoy at this point? Is it Lowry? Because Hampus Lindholm has sucked. Zadorov is not built for that. Peek's not built for that. Wotherspoon's not built for that. Carlo's not built for that. So it has to be either McAvoy or Lowry at this point.
Give me Lowry. He can't be worse.
You know what, Zach? You're probably not wrong.
Yeah, and that was the thing. I mean, for years, you had Torrey Krug as part of that mix. You knew that was the defenseman you were going to use there, and you were hoping that a guy like Charlie McAvoy could take that place, and he just has, I don't know. I mean, I'm not sitting here saying he sucks, but he hasn't ascended, I think, to that level, especially on the power play.
Yeah, it has been a bit of a disappointment, especially this season, with how the Bruins have looked offensively. It's just... Man, you got to get something going here. I don't know what is going on with this team. The inconsistencies are frightening.
We also talked quite a bit of Patriots tonight. Shime, you were one pretty satisfied with where Drake May is in his development. It's been 3-plus starts. Obviously, left that Jets game early, but you feel satisfied at least with where he's at right now in his development.
Yeah, so far so good. I'm happy with the trajectory of Drake May's progression here. And again, people have to realize that all progressions are not linear. It is not just a straight line up, and there's going to be some ups and downs. And I think those interceptions are definitely little dips. But I think a lot of these interceptions, none of them are just boneheaded, dumb mistakes. I think a lot of them are learning opportunities that Drake is going to be able to see in the film room and be like, yeah, that's a mistake I made, but I can adjust to that and not do that next time.
Yeah, and I think one of the phrases we've used quite a bit, whether it's Drake May, Jerod May, or any of the other new faces on this team this year, is growing pains.
Sure.
So can he take some of these growing pains, these interceptions, the fumbles, and mix them in with all the great things he's done, overcome the growing pains, and develop himself into a really good quarterback? Because it feels like through 3-plus starts, that potential is there for him to be I felt good about Mac Jones his rookie year. I already feel good about Drake May through three games, and I think you can see just the high-end talent is there much more in Drake May's case than it was in Mac Jones's case, or even if you want to throw Bailey Zappe in there too.
Yeah, you know me. I've been high on Drake May now since before the Patriots drafted him. But it gives me even more confidence to hear guys like Boomer Esiason come on our show and be really high on what he's seen from Drake May. And no, he's like, yeah, Drake May has it. Like, this kid's going to be really good. He's going to be a really good quarterback in the NFL. And I think that, to me, is a clear indication that, okay, what I've seen, what I've been watching isn't just my imagination. It isn't just me making things up along the way. There's another person who is legitimately good in the NFL and has a pretty good eye for this stuff that believes he could be pretty good.
We also talked Celtics. They have a reasonably big regular season game tomorrow night. Jaylen Brown is out with a hip injury. Feels like, Shime, this one's a little bit of a missed opportunity not having Jaylen Brown out there to really try to embarrass Steve Kerr.
Yeah, it's going to be a bummer, but at the same time, like Terp said, these guys are just focused on winning. So if Brown needs to sit out a little bit to make sure that an injury does not linger or hamper him later on in the season, that's what's most important, and that's what they're going to do here. They are worried about the long haul and not necessarily the short-term opponents.
So, Shime, it is election day, so before we go, I have to ask, what do you think the over-under is on the amount of angry political calls you'll get on the Greg Hill Show tomorrow morning?
Oh, God. 7?
7? Okay.
I'll set the number at 7.
Okay.
I don't know why 7, just was the first number that popped in my head.
So I'll take the under on calls, but the on texts.
Those are two different categories.
They are different. Yeah, they are.
If we're talking texts, like, that's going to be upwards of 100.
Yeah.
Oh. I would set the line at 97.
Yeah. And anything big on the Greg Hill Show tomorrow? I know today was a tie Tuesday.
Yeah, so tomorrow's a Celtics Wednesday. We'll have Mego on the program in the 9 o'clock hour tomorrow, and I believe we might even have a giveaway for the people, maybe some Bruins tickets ahead on the Greg Hill Show tomorrow morning.
Awesome. And then, you, of course, Thursday, you have my one of my favorite segments of the week, your conversation with Bill O'Brien. I'm looking forward to that. Shime, it was a pleasure tonight. I know this was kind of last minute. KJ was off tonight, so I'll be back tomorrow with KJ. You'll be back tomorrow morning on the Greg Hill Show. But it was a pleasure doing radio tonight with you, buddy.
Always fun, Lions. Can't wait till next time, bud.
Awesome. And a big thank you to Zach Coe. Thanks to all those
that called, Zach,
texted, and listened in to the show. For Chris Shime and Zach Coe, I'm John Lyons. Have a great rest of your night and tune in to the Greg Hill Show tomorrow morning.
See ya.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.